Hello, and welcome to our special series of Green Elephant interviews during March 2021, supporting the annual B Corps Month. B Corporations, or B Corps for short, are businesses that meet the highest standards of verified social and environmental performance, public transparency, and legal accountability to balance profit and purpose. Throughout March, we are chatting with key people in companies which have chosen to certify as B Corps and become a force for good. Today, I've been joined by Martin Bunch from Bates Wells. Bates Wells is a commercial law firm which, although the name may not be familiar, their work is clearly evident and benefiting millions of people. So if you're looking for a legal firm, Bates Wells is the one with a difference, as they have a purpose, proving that by being a certified B Corporation for over 5 years and being the first UK law firm to have joined the party and have just gone through, by my calculations, their second recertification process. Martin Bunch is the managing partner with a deep understanding in employment law. Martin is passionate about providing legal services which balance people with the planet while still making a profit. Welcome to the show, Martin.
Thank you, Russell, and thank you for having us on. It's great to be here.
And great timing, and we'll come on to that in a moment. But firstly, I'd like to ask about the legal profession. It's ethical at its heart. It's very ethical, and B Corps is for ethical businesses. But can you make an ethical company more ethical?
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, I think it's a bit like the animal farm analogy. You know, we're all ethical, but some are more ethical than others. lawyers get a bad rap, and I think some law firms get a bad rap. But actually, I think the purpose of lawyers and the law in our society is crucial and central to, you know, society itself and how it runs and how it rules. But I think there are ways of that. I think sometimes we've lost our way a bit. And my feeling is that lawyers can use their businesses for good and for use their businesses to make the world a better place. And I think that's what for us being a B Corp is all about. It's using our business for a better purpose than just perhaps making money out of it, and actually looking at other ways that we can use both the law and our business to make the world a better place.
Why do you think lawyers have got such a bad rap? Is it unfair, or was it at some point justified, or is it just because they obfuscate stuff with flowery language?
I think it's probably because they wear wigs in court still and things like that, you know, and it looks all very old-fashioned, and I think there is a certain amount of formality which goes with it. Which people don't like, and it seems very complicated. And also there's a reputation of them being very expensive. And to do anything these days, you know, costs a lot of money in legal terms. But that's partly because the laws have become more complicated, and people are much quicker to go to litigation and sue about these things. So I think, you know, there is, the world has become more, more litigious, and that has caused lawyers to have a bad reputation, because you get the sort of ambulance chasers who go after the personal injury type claims and things like that. So there is a section of lawyers who probably have caused the others to have a bad reputation.
Yeah, and it's unfair to a certain extent. But you're in being a B Corp, Bates Wells was first in the UK. And probably, by the looks of it, probably one of the earliest. You were in some of the first tranches of B Corp.
We were, in September 2015, we were in the first 100, I think, UK companies to become a B Corp, which we were very proud of, and we're still very proud of, actually, to be the first.
But you haven't been joined by many. I mean,
no, unfortunately
in the last
not. No.
2 years. Why? Is it a challenge? Is it particularly difficult for a legal firm to become a B Corp?
Well, it is in a way, partly because the structure of law firms is that there are partners. And you have to convince all the partners that it's a good idea for them. And not everybody has got that way of thinking yet. And perhaps they're more interested in their remuneration than other things. But I think actually the tide is turning. I think more law firms now are looking at this. I think more firms are interested in this, and I think it will change. I mean, UK is quite different. I mean, in the States and in South America, Australia, there are many law firms who are interested and have become B Corps. So I don't think it is unusual for professional services to think about it. But I think it's just harder at the moment. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what B Corps were. There's a sort of muddle with our charity sector, and in some way you're a charity. And I think that it's sort of the profit with purpose is now growing as an understanding.
Yes.
People, you know, you can still, you need to make a profit to have a purpose in a way, because you need to be able to fulfill that. I mean, I know charities do it, but I mean, in terms of for-profit businesses, you know, you need to make a profit to be able to have the impact that you want to have.
Yeah, I mean, this word sustainability is bandied around when people are thinking of sustainable food sources or sustainable energy and renewable energy sources. But actually, we do have to sustain ourselves as well in a commercial world. So,
yeah, well, we've been going 50 years now, and
right.
It's our 50th. Well, it was our 50th birthday last year. So we had a sort of 50th birthday in lockdown, like everybody else.
waving flags,
which is all rather dull, actually. But you know, bringing your own drink along and things like this. But
yeah.
It's, no, and I mean, that's the point, really. You know, in order to have an impact, you need to be sustainable. But in order to be sustainable, we need to be making a profit so we can pay for, you know, the climate work that we're doing, or the awards that we give out, or, you know, and for instance, I know you mentioned it right at the beginning, but, you know, the pro bono case that we did for Uber, the Uber drivers.
Oh, yeah.
Which has such a huge impact on, you know, the gig economy and workers in the gig economy. But we couldn't do that unless we were making a profit.
Agreed. But now we've mentioned it fully, and it was announced on the late in February.
Yeah.
Only a few days ago. Why was that case so important?
Well, I think what it was, I think what has become the gig economy is a good thing, obviously, because it gives lots of people different work, and they can come in and come out and choose to work when they want to. And there's a freedom about it. And it's a change in society and how world of work goes. But I think what had happened was the shift had gone too much into the large companies, who were then taking advantage of some of their people who were working for them because it was tax advantageous to them, or other advantages. And in the case of the Uber drivers, they were being treated as self-employed workers for pay. But actually, in the way that they were treated, we proved in the Supreme Court, they were in fact workers, which meant that they were entitled to holiday pay and sick pay and had better treatment. So Uber basically had to treat the people working for them, their drivers, in a better way, or will have to now anyway.
Yeah, and they had made changes, because I think they probably knew the writing was on the wall by the time the court ruling came out. What is the difference with the worker? I'm sorry, it's one of those things.
There's three different types of people: the employee, where you have a contract of employment, and then you're bound to provide that. A worker was a concept that the Labour government brought in the 80s, which is slightly less than an employee, but you are providing your services personally yourself.
Yes.
And it's the middle ground between that and a genuinely self-employed person who just can work for anyone, you know, your window cleaner or someone like that.
Yes.
Who can just provide work to whoever they want to. So a worker like for Uber is not actually an employee, because they can't be told when to work. But what they do is, when they are working, they are entitled to certain things such as holiday pay, sick pay, and to be treated properly.
And of course, well, we live in Cornwall, and the gig economy has got a kind of a bad name in Cornwall. It's one of those things. But as you said earlier, there's aspects of it, and the concept of it is actually very flexible. It provides.
That's the whole point about it, really. Is, I mean, it is a good thing. It's just making sure that the people working in it are treated fairly and reasonably, and that's the crucial point, is that it is actually a good idea to have that flexibility of an economy which is flexible. People can come and go as they wish, but they just need to be treated reasonably and fairly.
I mean, it brings one of the other things that Bates-Wells have been involved in also is the Better Business Act. Now, obviously, this isn't an act actually.
No, not yet.
It's a campaign which is run by B Corps. But what was your involvement in that one?
Well, as a law firm, we originally helped set up B Lab, which is the sort of charity behind the B Corp movement, and they're the ones that look at all the certifications and such like. And so we've been the legal advisors to them, and we've been helping them look at ways of actually widening the appeal of the sort of the B Corp idea of this idea of using your business for good, for other things. And how, I mean, the thing about it is the shareholder primacy of the current company's law, where companies have to worry about their shareholders first. So that, you know, especially the big companies, you know, the shareholders hold the power. They are the ones that influence where they invest or how they use their money. What we're saying and what the B Corp movement is about is looking at widening that. So you look at all your stakeholders, and all your stakeholders have as much as importance as your shareholders. So your suppliers, your staff, you know, everybody involved, all stakeholders in that business need to be considered when you're making decisions rather than just your shareholders. And so the Better Business Act is looking to be able to have ingrained in articles of companies this idea that it's not just the shareholders that come first, and so that you don't need to necessarily become a B Corp to be a better business, but this will encourage businesses to use their businesses differently and better, in a better way. And it's not yet an act. It's something that the B Corp UK are launching now, and we're really wanting everyone to get behind it because it's a great idea, and it's time for business to change, I think.
I've got the website up, I'm looking at it, and we'll put a link to it on our showcase, which is betterbusinessact.org. But it is 160 companies currently signed up for a greener, cleaner, fairer future for all. And there's some good names, you know, there's some big names in there. There's perhaps people, might encourage people to look at Innocent, Bulb, WWA, Mindful Chef. There's some, they're just rolling by me. So it's worth people going and having a look at that, because, you know, that's going to be a campaign that B Corp's pushes forward. And
I think it's particularly relevant as we come out of this sort of lockdown and pandemic as well, because we talk about, you know, building back better.
Green
and actually now, you know, now maybe is the time that the B Corp movement will really, you know, find its stride in a way. And I think, you know, when we joined in 2015, I was really thinking we were on the, you know, the start, the crest of the wave, and it was starting, and it's been slower to be picked up than I sort of hoped it would be. But I think now is a really good time, because actually at one point, you know, before we had all the Brexit stuff, you know, the government was starting to get interested in it. But now I think really is the time. And now I think that, you know, a lot of people will now look at it and go, yeah, actually, that's really what our business is all about. We are values driven. We do want to make a difference to the world. We do have a purpose. They'll look at the B Corp movement and think, yeah, that's a really good thing to join. And it's a great community and to be part of. And it's a worldwide community as well.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, I mentioned the two other UK firms, and you mentioned the fact that there are a lot of legal firms, Mexico, Taiwan, Taiwan, Indonesia.
I don't know the one in Taiwan, actually, but I'm sure you're right.
Do you have contact with those? Is there?
We do, actually, we do. And there was the sort of a legal group that set up, led especially by the South American law firms, because there's most there, actually, or there's quite a lot in North America as well.
Right.
And we had some contact with some Australian firms as well, who were keen to pick up contacts and just sort of swap ideas and such like.
And I think that's quite fascinating, really, because would you have done that if you weren't a B Corp?
Well, I'd like to say no, but I think yes is the answer, because we already have a network which we set up back in the 70s European law firms. So we sort of have a group called Parlex, which we're part of a sort of fairly loose group of network of European firms, and it's a sort of a friendly arrangement that you will refer work back and forth. There's no requirement, we've already had that with the Europe, and that's actually extended past there to other places now. It's in America and India and New Zealand. And
Okay, that's interesting. Well, I mean, that's great. It's because I think sharing experience can help both sides of it. It doesn't have to be
And it's good to extend your your network to other places and understand other lawyers and, you know, other law firms and other jurisdictions. It's good.
Yeah, especially if you have to work across them as well, I expect.
Yeah.
So why did you pick B Corps as a certification to chase down? What kind of attracted you to it, if you can answer that?
I think we've always been a values-driven firm. We started in the 70s, and we've always been really interested in helping civil society and improving civil society. And, you know, we helped Fair Trade become a charity because the Charity Commission wouldn't accept that Fair Trade could, you know, have charitable objectives. So the Fair Trade Foundation was set up in, I think, 95, and that was. We helped set up the Law Works, which is the solicitors pro bono group, and have invented new legal structures for social enterprises. It's called a community interest company.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but there's about 15,000. Well, one of my partners invented that back in the early 2000s and set it up. So we've always been there and interested in that. And then we heard about the B Corp movement from the States, actually, when it first started. And we then got contacted by B Lab, and they came and did a presentation to us. And we just thought, actually, this is us. This is what we are all about.
It's fitting,
And it resonated with us so strongly that all of our partners just said, yes, we want to do that. So we signed up. Well, we went through certification, which wasn't, you know, and it's not just about getting certification. We had to change our LLP agreement, you know, our sort of governing deed, to change it. So we put in this purpose about having a positive impact on society and people and the environment. But, you know, that resonated internally so much for us, for our people. You know, with we sort of declared the climate emergency back in 2019, and we've gone net carbon zero. And, you know, it's something that our people are very interested in. So it's not only external, it's also internal. For us, it's a message to our people as well that we are serious about these things.
So, big advantage if it's at the heart of your people already and the heart of your business structure. But
that helps.
Bit of a challenge perhaps for these that are very profit focused
I think that's probably goes back to the question you asked about why there aren't more law firms, because I think unless you're already on that journey and thinking about it and looking for it, it's very hard to suddenly switch to this. So I think if it's something that you're all interested in, then it's easier to make that step into the B Corp type certification. Whereas if you've been very profit focused and money focused, it's harder to make that change.
I had and on the related subject, but I just want your opinion. I had a B Corp denier, talk to me. I knew them quite well, and then all of a sudden they said, "I don't really believe in that because I think it's just a marketing stunt." Is it?
No, not at all. It really isn't.
Could it be? Could it come?
No, I don't think it could. Actually, I really don't think it could. One, you need to change your governing documents and such like. So you have to really go to town on making sure that you have all the right legal documents in place. But also, you have to go through this certification process, which is tough. We've done it 3 times now. We've just finished our third one, and actually, they've made the going through it even harder. I'm really proud that we managed to increase our score this time, even though they've made it harder. But it is tough. They look at everything, and the amount of documentation and information you have to give them to get the certification, to get the points that you need for the certification. And they look at everything, your clients, your people, how transparent you are. Your business model, everything. And it's tough to do. And if you just thought it was a marketing ploy, you go have to do an awful lot of work just for a marketing ploy. There's easier ways of doing it.
Absolutely. I just suggested that they go run through the assessment because it's free to use.
It is, yeah. And a lot of companies use it actually to test how good they are.
I think I heard somebody said in the tens of thousands companies.
Yeah, worldwide. It really is big.
So, but there's only 4,000-ish. 3,800 is the last count I heard, that they're registered worldwide in 72 countries, wasn't it?
So, yeah. Although actually the UK is the fastest growing community, and I think they've had more interest during this lockdown period than ever before.
Well, I think a lot of people started to realise that in lockdown that they could do things differently. They didn't have to be tied to their office or their desk or their, and their people were either, some would be happier, but others, and they might have put better employment things in place to work in this rather strange environment.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, we've been contacted. I mean, partly by the Uber judgment, but I mean, you know, we've been contacted by a lot of Uber type companies who are now looking actually to change their documentation to being a little bit more ethical. And so I think, you know, that's been really good. But we also, I mean, we're also putting out some advice for B Corps about how to have employment practices which suit being a B Corp and maybe a more modern hybrid world. Because I think
it's quite difficult, you know, employment to be really flexible in employment. Yeah, I always find the fact that we got this kind of employment law and all these stuff that was what 2022 acts or something that govern you the first day you employ somebody, and then we kind of encourage to lay flexibility on top of it. So you give them flexible hours or paid sick leave and all those things, and then it comes down to you say, well, are hours the important bit? And when you break that down and go, it's actually, you know, how committed, how much effort people make. As soon as you break that thing and break the hours link, you kind of go, how do I fulfill the minimum wage? And it starts to become quite difficult at that point. I don't know if that's...
I think it is. I mean, I think it, you know, for many employers, it's a nightmare, employment law. I think we had more changes to employment law during the sort of the Tony Blair years than we've ever had in the whole history of employment law, actually.
Really?
Okay. I mean, they brought in so many changes, some good, some bad. But I mean, I think it is good that we're regulated because there are still too many abuses of it. And we still see that going on of employees and workforces and such like. I mean, you have the, you know, the 0 hours contracts for that sports clothing company, which were really bad and were obviously, you know, taking advantage of staff, but actually 0 hour contracts can be good. I mean, they can be used in the care industry well, where there's a high demand of people and they give people the flexibility to work when they want, but it's where the employer acts, you know, in an ethical way, I suppose. And I think more understanding that they have to nowadays, otherwise they're not going to have people working for them.
And people are going to become smarter, and I think it's part of the reason that perhaps we've seen a bit more of a swing to more sustainable, socially responsible attitudes within businesses during lockdown, is because they've had time to think. It's kind of been a bit of a shock to the system, and they've had time to think perhaps I can do this differently.
I also think that actually a lot of the I would say younger generation, you know, without sounding like some old fuddy-duddy, you know, but you know, that actually the younger people are like my kids coming through, they are interested in these things. They're interested in companies that care about the planet, and they are interested in companies which have a purpose, and they want to work for somewhere that does that, not some, you know, company that doesn't give a damn about them, or you know, or just pays badly, or you know, has terrible work practices. And actually they're walking with their feet and walking in and showing or voting with their feet rather than walking away from those jobs or not going to them.
I've seen I'm approaching old fuddy-duddy status myself, and
I'm sure you're not.
I'm kids. But the younger ones have almost probably because they don't get a career absolutely in mind, and they try stuff and they move around.
You've seen that much more now.
And you see that a lot, that they'll say to you, and you see it in people's CVs on LinkedIn and things like that. You think, my goodness, they've had...
it always used to be a bad thing, wasn't it? If you'd had a job, for, you know. Yeah. But now it's almost compulsory that you have to. But
you look at that and you go, okay, what if they ended up in? Oh, they spent 2 years in. Okay, that's what they're good at.
Yeah.
It is a fascinating, changing world, employment law. I could probably talk for hours on it.
Although you have B Corps like Escape the City, who you know, encourage people to find jobs which are more worthwhile and moving away from that sort of corporate world and finding more what they want to do, and you know, they've got a great ethos and
Escape the City, I'll dig that one out. It's always get introduced Every time I speak to a B Corp, they're always happy to tell you about another B Corp that's brilliant.
Yeah, no, they're a B Corp, and they do that. Now they do an Escape the City top 100 actually of firms to work for, which is surveyed. They come through a survey. They just released their latest one actually, so it's a really good thing to look for actually, and for people looking for a different type of work as well.
Well, I'll add that to the show page as well, so people can, because we're not talking to Escape the City in March. Maybe I can get them in later.
Yeah, do.
You've already mentioned that the certification is not a walk in the park. So obviously, all this effort's worth it. What do you value most about being a B Corp?
I think there's two things on that. Firstly, externally, it's a shorthand way of telling out of the outside world of what we're about and what our values are. And so it's sort of shorthand for being able to say who we are.
Yeah.
And internally, it sort of gives us a framework to work to and within, because we have interest right across the board from, you know, everybody working in our firm, from lawyers to the facilities team they are great advocates, actually. They, you know, they come up with all these recycling ideas. We recycle contact lenses and things like that, you know.
Okay, yeah, I haven't really thought about that, but yeah.
You know, it's amazing what the ideas they come up with, because they're encouraged by this B Corp status internally to think about these things and come up with it and new ideas. It's really great. And we have champions within the firm who sort of come out with these ideas and push it. And it helps us internally as well. I mean, in terms of transparency, about telling people more about how we're doing our financials. And that's important. And, you know, in terms of better business, I think that's what it's all about. And I just think it helps you being a better business.
Yeah, so you do hear so many times, and I worked for a council for 30 years, and they have an idea that they need to implement a policy.
Yeah.
Which doesn't help calling it a policy to start off with, because they've got to do, you know, discrimination training or equalities training, or they need to, you know, we're going to do a sustainability group. But if the employees are kind of driving that, if the employees are already pushing it forward, which of course you need to create a culture to do that.
Yeah.
Which you clearly have.
Yeah, we have an employee forum that are very vocal and such like. I remember we were discussing, we wanted to have a new dress code because we wanted to move away from the idea of having a dress code. And I just wanted one. And it was like, be sensible. Well, actually, we wanted to have an employee handbook, which was just two words, be sensible. Because that's all you need, really. But actually, most people didn't want that because they wanted a bit more guidance about, well, what can we do? Can we wear sandals or can we wear flip-flops? And you sort of go, well, just, you're in an office. You know, do you think it's really appropriate to dress like you're on the beach? You know, and so I think, you know, we've got some way to go, but I do think we can be better at these sort of things, and you don't need policies.
No, I've heard of others attempting the same. The name of the company that escapes me that wrote one, which just essentially their dress code was be professional. And they said by changing it from this long list of things, I think they're a recruitment firm, they just, everyone upped it. Everyone upped their dress code. They didn't try and push against or relax it, because they had their own perspective of what a professional looked like.
That's right. And I think it's about, you know, and that's what it's all about, really. It's trusting the people you work with and work for you, you know, and giving them, actually treating them like adults. And then I think people behave like them.
Yeah. So we asked if you had an action or tip you could give to our herd of listeners.
Yeah. Well, actually, I did think about some actions and some more sort of like proactive ones. And but actually, I thought this was something that we talked about at our place. And it's about living more generously and showing more kindness in how you spend your everyday lives, especially arising out of this lockdown. And I think I've always gone on about having kindness in business, because I don't think it's necessary not to have kindness. And I think living more generously actually is a good way of doing it. Just a very quick example.
Please.
My wife found in America this idea of a free library. And so we bought one from there. And it's a small box you put outside your house.
Yeah.
And we have children's books and adult books in there. And we put it up about a year ago. And all the books sort of went, and we filled them up, and we just asked people to give their, you know, books they didn't
there
want.
Are the
And
books,
we've
yeah.
had so many people giving us books, and it goes out there, and they go, and we get notes saying how wonderful it is. I just think, you know, that generosity of people giving us books and us giving them out to them, it's just, you know, it makes the world a better place. And so free libraries, I would say, is a great,
yeah,
look into free libraries.
Brilliant. I'll put free libraries as a add-on tip to there. Something we got one up the road, and it's just brilliant. And also if you want to, you can get a little money and it goes to the community centre that's struggling.
Yeah, well, we give it to, we people do leave a bit of money in there occasionally, and we give it to the local food bank actually. But you know, because our road, where I live in London, people walk up and down to the schools and all the kids, and they just, you can see them running up to it in the morning and looking at all the
what's
books.
In there. It's, oh, nothing.
Yeah, I think, you know, actually it's that's lovely. So living generously, I think, is a good.
Oh, I love the action. Tip. Love the tip. That's and it's nice and short and snappy. What about a recommendation? What should I be looking at or reading or watching?
Well, I'm very interested in history. I love history, and recently I had to rewatch Andrew Marr's History of Modern Britain with my son, who's doing the A level on history. And actually, I just think it's such a good reminder. There's only five of them, and they go from 45 to 2000.
Oh,
and it's just a reminder of where that just some of the misconceptions about what who we are and what we're about. And if you look at our history from the war to now, I think it's a reminder to people about actually, you know, really what this country is about and who we are, and maybe changing some of the perceptions of what we should be and what how we are. And I just think actually it puts some proper truths to where we're at. I mean, we don't seem to learn from history, but I think we should. And that's why I like history so much. But
yeah, I heard another comment recently is in Victorian times, business was philanthropic, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very heart it was. A far more generous business. And then we kind of went through desperate times in the beginning of the century, and then in recovery became so capitalistic that we create markets can go boom and bust in minutes almost.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the Keynesian ideas of this, the primacy of the shareholder and everything's about that, only really started in the 60s, and there was much more philanthropy earlier on.
Easy for you to say.
Easy, absolutely. Yeah. The other word is innovative as well. I can never say.
Oh yeah.
They keep putting it. They keep putting it in my speeches for work, and I go, no, I just cross that one out and put new,
clever new.
Yeah, clever new things.
Rethinking. Yeah.
Yeah. Love. So I think, you know, philanthropy is, it's time for it to come back, and it is coming back, and I think actually. If you look at the recent history, it's something that we need really back as well.
Yeah. I mean, and it's been a tough time for those organisations that have, you know, we think of these charities who've had to close all their shops, but the troubles are still happening. There are still children in desperate need. There are still elderly people that are suffering with, you know, illnesses and dementia, and they need help and care and whatever the arrangement is, but suffer desperately by not having a high street or be able to do some of their normal campaigns and events to raise money. So philanthropy, let's get it in for see if I said it right at one point during that.
We'll just change it to charity, shall we?
Charity's going to have to be important. Yes.
Yeah. No, it is. Well, it is important, and our third sector is so important to the society, and I think it gets overlooked about how important it is and should be. I know we work a lot in that sector, and it is such an important sector.
Yeah. So finally, then. Fact or fake? I understand that you have some facty or fakety things.
I have three facts for you, all on sort of like a little bit about sustainability, because I know that's your thing. So
definitely our thing.
I have three questions for you. The first animal to go extinct due to global warming was the golden toad in 1989.
Oh, wow, really? 89. Global warming, who would have thought it? You do think of it being such a modern term. I'm going to say that is a fact.
You're right. It is.
Oh,
it's true.
Good. Good.
Okay. The average cow produces 250 to 500 litres of methane a day.
And it has to be said, and we did have a look at this at one point, but I'm fumbling because I'm trying to think of the figures, because they produce more up front than they do out back, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Rumination and all that. So say that again. How many litres?
250 to 500 litres of methane.
Wow, that's
a day.
A big band. I'm going to say that's a, it might be higher. Fake.
Okay, I'm not going to tell you because I'm going to tell you the last one, so otherwise you'll know.
Okay. Ooh, nice twist.
1,000 species of animals and plants are on the verge of extinction in 2020, due to the impact of climate change.
Say that again.
1,000 species of animals and plants are on the verge of extinction due to the impact of climate change.
I think, unfortunately, that might be very fake.
You're right. Actually, it's 1 million.
Yeah, it's horrific. I think there's only 8 million species in the world, and 1 million of them, are on extent. I mean, excepting the subspecies of insects and such like. But yeah, I mean,
those that we don't know about. But yes, no, actually, it's 1 million. So it's quite frightening. And it's,
and how did I do on the cow one?
The cow one, you're right. It's true.
It's true.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's they do produce between 250 and 500 litres of methane.
I said fake, so I'm going to take
that. Oh, right. Okay, right.
Fair enough. 2-1. I'm happy with that result. I've tested on my sustainability facts. I'm delighted to have come out on top on that one. That just leaves me to thank you very much, Martin, for joining us.
Thank you. It's been really enjoyable and nice talking to you.
And you.
Thank you.
We really hope that you found this special B Corp Month episode both informative and entertaining. Make sure you don't miss any of the 31 interviews with B Corporations who are striving to be a force for good. So make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss a thing, and don't forget to spread the word with others. If you have any questions about being or becoming a B Corp, or any comments and suggestions about the show, please do get in touch. You can email studio@greenelephant.show, or visit the website greenelephant.show, or find us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube or Twitter by searching for Green Ellipod or The Green Elephant Show. You can also review the show on Google and Apple Podcasts. Join us tomorrow, and we hope you have a sustainable day.